I was overweight, smoking 20 cigarettes a day, and was quite unhealthy. I climbed the stairs to work, I was breathless. I saw another photograph of me lying on the beach, which I would say still lying beside me, and it wasn't. I said, I don't need to be seeing that, nobody needs to be seeing that. And it was really the kick up the arse that I needed to get to turn a corner. So I went home that evening and I told my wife, that's it, I said, I'm getting healthy, I'm going to start doing a bit of running. And
hello, and welcome to the Social Fabric podcast with me, Andrea Splendori. And this week, my guest is Paddy Houlihan. Paddy is a husband, father, runner, manager and coach in the GA club, but it's most importantly a real community driven individual. The songs in this podcast have been shortened for rights reason. Please subscribe and share. It's the only way podcasts like this have a chance to survive. The show is also broadcast weekly on 90.3 Near FM and 100.3 Flirt FM. The title tune is Alice by Lucky Bones.
Can I call you up, oh Alice, on a Friday night? We could reminisce on old days and we could talk a while. Just sit and talk a while.
Now, first of all, thanks a million for agreeing to be talking to me. And I know you're a long-term fan of the podcast. You've been listening to quite a few. We discussed a few of them over the years, and thanks for that. It's great. But you never had the chance to tell your story to me. So now's your chance.
Right? You're very privileged.
So I put it out yesterday on a couple of social media channels to say I was talking to you. Mm-hmm. And the reaction has been really good. Like, really... I guess one quick way to explain, to describe is there's a lot of love for Paddy around our town.
Good to hear.
That's good to hear. But, yeah, and it's great. Where do you think that comes from?
Really, I don't know. I guess I've always been described maybe as a people's person. I think after my father, I talked to the dog on the side of the road. We have a laugh. There's a wedding on, or some social occasion, if my father would get him in the corner, he said, oh, he's done for now, daddy has him, and he's not getting, he's not letting him go. So I didn't pick it up off the floor. I'd be people person. I like conversing with people, talking to people, finding out about people. I like people.
And tell me a bit more about your father and growing up, because I just heard you saying that you're grew up in Leash. Tell us a bit more about Paddy before coming to Greystones, the Paddy we know in the last few years.
Yeah, I grew up in a rural area, Rathdowney, County Leash. Leash is the most midland county in Ireland. So it was really kind of farmland around us. We were a few miles from the nearest town, which was Rathdowney, which was a population of maybe 1,000 people. I worked with a lot of farmers, baling hay, silage, turning turf, on that kind of thing when I was growing up. So with a simple upbringing, grew up in the 70s, 80s, and life was good. We didn't have a lot of money. We had one car. We had to have one car, as did everybody back then. We didn't, looking back, he said, things were tight, but we never had to the sense of being poor. I guess it was the 80s, everybody was poor. So that was the norm. But it was it was an enjoyable childhood. We never wanted for anything. Anything that we needed rather than wanted. Anything we needed was certainly provided by my loving parents, Dennis and Francis, and had a good upbringing and good living.
And so just 1,000 people, like I grew up in Rome where it was 6 million people.
Okay.
But I love the idea of 1,000 people, and I'm sure you knew, probably didn't know every single one of them, but you knew the vast majority of them, given that your father Dennis would talk to everybody.
You'd know everybody, pretty much, like from one end of town to the other. Everybody knew everybody. Everybody had a word for everybody. Even if you didn't know somebody, you waved at them or said hello to them. And it would be a big discussion, who's your man? And you'd find out within about the hour who he was and what he was doing in Rathdowney. It was a good atmosphere. We grew up, and there was the school there, so we had like, you look at school places and places like Greystones, it's so hard to get a class place or a school place. You know, we had three teachers in our primary school, you know, so one teacher would teach second, third and fourth class. So you divide it out amongst the rooms. So, like, you know, there was 13 boys in our class. So, you have everybody went to Mass on a Sunday, you did hurling training during the week. Two of the things that I don't ever remember getting the choice in doing, if you lived where I was from, it's all hurling area, so you were going to be a hurler and you were going to be an ultra boy. I never remember given a choice in either of those. You just were. Right down here, like, you know, it's a couple of miles from Kilkenny border and a couple of miles from Tipperary border, so it's all hurling. So yeah, it all really followed around the hurling club, the schools and the church. Yeah.
I remember talking to Aidan O'Mahony for this podcast, you know, obviously captain of Kerry for years now. I think that was football.
It's a great podcast, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was football. But anyway, it's a guy I'm more interested in. Again, you know, with similar vintage, you're younger than me, but I'm trying to think, I couldn't wait to, like, I know I play football, but I couldn't wait to get out of my town because at 16, 17, 18, all I wanted to do was to go find the world. What was it like for you at that age? The guy was a great support, I'm assuming, for you.
Yeah, there was a sense of that, but only, like, it was a great place to grow up, but it was a microcosm of something you really needed. I felt that I just wanted to go to college, go live anywhere but Rathdowney. I think it's the age for that as well, when you're 17, 18, and at the end of being a teenager and you're a bit restless and you want to go out in the world. So the GA is great. No matter where you go, there's always somebody either playing it or watching it. And you know, a few years later when I was going to Australia for a year, again, you go to some of the bars or the clubs or the Irish club in Western Australia, Subiaco, you always have to find that connection, whether it be through the GAA or musical taste or whatever like that. There's always the Irish tend to find each other and celebrate your culture, which is very rich.
Brilliant. Just another thing on the GAA. Do you think they kept you from mischief, from getting into trouble? Or did you get into trouble?
That would be a different meaning of the matter.
No, but you know, without exposing whatever you get up to, but it was there now.
Yeah, no, so certainly, like, I mean, growing up as a teenager, like, you know, you were hurling a few times, and you're hurling at school and you're hurling in the evening time. You know, when you have activities like that and you're meeting friends and you're hurling, you know, you're not, I suppose, necessarily on street corners, and you're not getting up to the less time for divilment, the better. And it's you know, it's one thing I kind of suppose with my own children. So it doesn't matter what they decide to do, whether it's GAA or gymnastics or athletics or whatever it is to do, give them that many things that they can do, that they'll find something that they like, and that hopefully they'll meet somebody that has interest in it and have good friends there, and that they won't be maybe hanging out, you know, smoking the cigarettes at maybe 14 or 15, and you know, they don't seem to do that as much as they did when I was growing up. To find people with similar interests and it keeps them from getting into development, as it were.
Very good. Tell me about your first song then, Paddy. What did you pick and why?
Okay. My first song, I suppose, yeah, around the year I went to secondary school in 1989. Yes, and remember there was a lot of music, so like, you know, would have been like into bands like AC/DC and Guns N' Roses and Nirvana and things like that. But my first really experience of kind of really good live music was going to Fela in the early 90s. And I mean, there was a lot of Irish bands and the band scene back then. Like, I mean, you're looking at, you know, bands like Hot House Flowers, Franklin Waters, The Stunning, The Four of Us, The Saw Doctors, Engine Alley, Cranberries, The Emotional Fish. One of the big songs I really sticks out at the time, I loved the song. It was Parachute from Something Happens. It's a great song, and just like in the lyrics, one of the lyrics is like, take a parachute and jump, you can't stay here forever, when everyone else has gone, being alone, that doesn't seem that clever. Mm-hmm. And it's just, yeah, I've always remembered that, and it's a great song.
Take a parachute and jump. You can't stay here forever when everyone else is gone. Been all alone, don't seem that clever. Take a parachute and go. There's gonna have to be some danger. Take a parachute and jump. You're gonna have to take flight. If the wind don't catch you, I will, I will.
You mentioned going to college. I'm always curious about the crossroads, you know, of our lives, where we pick something because we think it's right at that time, and we find ourselves elsewhere years later. And it's only when you look back and you realize, what if? But you know, we don't live by what if. So, what brought you to college, and what college did you do? Like, and again, I'm trying to picture this. Right then, you've been, you know, fairly rural, 1,000 people. What would inspire you to go to college? What did you do?
Yeah, I did business studies management in college. I went to DIT at Mountjoy Square. It was where the business courses were done at the time. Now, I think they moved on to Angel Street since then. But it was a COMAD, College of Marketing and Design. Had a really great time there. It was like, you know, when you go from a small town like Rathdowney and you go to college, to Dublin, the big smoke. It all of a sudden, you're your own boss, you think. You can do what you want, you think. you have a sense of freedom. Maybe sometimes it's just maybe a little bit too much when you're 17, 18 years of age. Because when I did my lead instructor, I was 17, so you're pretty young. And I went to college business studies management, and I enjoyed my time in there in college. It was great college. The head of school is actually Pat O'Neill. He's a customer now in Super Value. It's funny because I did meet him years later and I recognized him. I don't know if he recognized me. And so I introduced myself and said, "You don't remember me?" Yeah, I said, "Remember when I was in your office when I think it was about 4 or 5 hours between lectures." And except a few friends, there was a match on, we went for a pint, so I ended up getting taken into the office and being told off maybe for having a pint between lectures. It wasn't the thing to do, but he had a good laugh at that. But he's a good guy, very understanding, and it wasn't too much trouble. But I suppose at that age, you don't really know what you want to do. And the CA or CES, I got offered a degree in computer engineering at the time. Or a cert diploma in business studies management, and I went to business studies management. I suppose because I couldn't see myself working as a computer engineer, to be in maybe a corner office or something, like, you know, working with computers. I just couldn't see myself doing that. Whereas business studies management, I always thought, you know, that I'd go into business, dealing with people, and that would left it far more open as into what I could possibly do. But yeah, at that age, you don't really know what you want to do.
And so the transition to what you didn't know what to do to grown up and do what you're doing, how did you get, so you're now the manager now at Logan Super Value, and you have been for a number of years, and we get that in a second, but before you came here, what brought you into the supermarket business or retail business?
I suppose going back to Rathdowney, I did work for 4 years in Super Value, from 1991, which is like 30 years, you know, it was 30 years in June since I started the Super Value. So I guess I'd worked for 4 years in Super Value. After I finished college, I really didn't know what to do or what way to go or what I was thinking of doing. So I was really at a kind of crossroads, and my mother rang me up and said, I see a job in advertising as trainee manager in Super Value. I said, I don't know if I want to be doing that. Like, I've been there, done that for 4 years, and my mother said, "Well, you have to do something now." And I said, "Yeah, okay." So maybe I'll apply for that, and I pretend to them that that's what I want to do, until I really figure out what I want to do when I grow up. So, Yeah, like 25 years later, I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do when I grow up. I started that and kept going, and decided, I mean, I enjoyed it. You know, it's a challenging job. It's a good job. You meet a lot of people, you meet a lot of characters, but yeah, to be honest, now I can't see myself having ever done anything else.
So you've been in the supermarket in Whisper Valley for 25 years?
I started in management in 1996. Training manager, which was 25 years ago. But I guess as a part-timer from 1991, packing shelves and filling half stone bags of potatoes from 4 stone bags for £7-8 per week, kind of as you do. So it kind of, the last 25 years, look, you know yourself, you know, you said, where did those 25 years go? You know, they go really fast, but they do. I really can't imagine myself doing anything else. I don't know if I'm qualified at doing anything else, but the next 25 years goes as fast. The last 25 years, I'm hoping for myself in retirement and having made a decent living. And
But you just say something that is paramount to a lot of the work I'm doing recently with the coaching and stuff, and a lot of times when I'm meeting people, where you just say, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. You know, and I mean, I know I come into the shop quite regularly, so you know, and you always have a word for somebody. You always have, most of the time you have a smile on your face. You know, some days you don't because it's something. But
of course,
but what is that enjoyment? What is the what is the key to enjoyment? What is your key to enjoyment? How do you bring that enjoyment into work? And what's the trick for you?
Yeah, look, we all have good days, bad days, and all the in between days. I think no matter what's happening or what's going on in your life, you know, you can't always let people see that there might be something wrong. I mean, the fact that you don't see me smiling every day, said some days maybe I'm not smiling. I'm wondering, like, you know, am I living by my ethos of leaving whatever at home or any. We always have things going on in our lives. Big or small, but when you're at work, I think, you know, put a smile on your face. Today goes faster, better. When you meet somebody, when you look them in the eye, when you give them a smile, you ask them how they are, and you know they respond. People respond, I think, better to niceness. If you're going around, if you're sullen, not very nice, you don't get that reciprocated. That's not to say that, you know, you do get challenging situations, you get challenging customers, dare I say. But, you know, I think you've got to remember everybody's doing the best that they can. So when you do get maybe a challenging customer, you do let them say their piece. Don't jump in with excuses or whatever it is, and realize that everybody is has their own things going on. For example, whenever I hire staff, I always ask them to just think of what might be happening in that other person's life that day. And I do give an example of, like, a few years back, there was a lady coming in, and she's going to the basket, and she seemed a little lost and a little bit unsure of what she was doing. So I said, excuse me, is everything all right? Is everything going okay? And she told me under no circumstances, I'm fine, go away from me. I don't need to be interfered with. Get away from me now. And I said, okay. And so I went about my business, and 10 minutes later, she's still going around with a bit, you know, wanting in the basket. And I said, really, is there any way I can help you out or anything I can do for you? And she solidly ate me on the spot and just told me in all circumstances what she thought of me, and I could just get away from her. And I went, okay. So that was fine, and I let her about her business. And the following day, one of the staff members asked me to come down to the shop door. There was a lady looking for me. So I saw the same lady again. I said, oh God, here we go again. I'm going to get ate again. But she came in to offer an apology. She said, like, how very sorry she went home, and she felt so bad, felt so sorry for how she treated me, how she'd spoken to me. And she explained that she was back in Greystones, she had nothing in the Argus, and she just had to get some shopping, but she was just after coming back from Australia, the other side of the world, where she was only after burying her only son, her only child. And that it was just like, you know, that she'd been speaking to nobody on the plane right back, all the way to Greystones. And she was just in a very dark place at that time. And I was the first person that she'd come across who asked her, was she okay? So, you know, after hearing a story like that, like, I mean, what can you do? You just wanted to give her a big, big hug, you know? So sometimes I recount that story to staff and say, look, you know, how would I have felt if I had said to that customer, listen, I'm only asking you a question. There's no need to give out to me. I'm only trying to help, like, you know, and if I batter her up, you know, comes away. So I just, you never know what's going on anybody's life, so you just try to stay positive as best you can, and, you know, helps everybody get through today.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful story, but it's a wonderful example of what is now that buzzword of emotion intelligence. But it is that emotion intelligence. It is being able to empathize with people, and by leading by example, then therefore your staff can see that, you know, there is another way to deal with, and it's a different style of management, and everybody's a little bit happier. And it's fascinating because I worked years and years ago in the restaurant business where the feedback is immediate. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with you. Like you don't have 2 weeks before somebody comes back to tell you something. So if the ham is out of date, you'll know it there and then. And that's one thing we underestimate sometimes. You know, we take the jobs that supermarkets, is that we all need to go to a supermarket, we all need to buy food, but we don't think sometimes what goes on behind. And you guys are super busy all the time. There's no stop. I mean, it's always like a hive of activities there.
Sure.
That is not just stacking the shelves. Stacking the shelves is only what we see.
Part of it, yeah. Pretty important part of it, but a part of it.
Yeah. And tell me something, because I noticed, and it's always a great indication, and I'm not advertising super bad in Greystones, it's not what I'm here for, but I'm just curious, because it's always a great indication to see the same staff there for a number of years. And mm-hmm. you've got the same stuff, like a lot of staff has been there for a long time, since I remember anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can see them growing, you know, they're no longer as young as they were.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you had the transition period of this stuff, people coming and going in the summer, but what is the attraction there again for these guys working with you? What is that keeps them there?
Yeah, look, I guess the culture in an organization is very, very important, and super value. Again, I'm not here to advertise for super value, mm-hmm. but super value is an organization that would put forward the importance of having staff that would empathize, that give good customer service. And service it is one of the important pillars in our real food, real people ethos. For myself, like when I say I would have learned a long time ago, it's, you know, when I'm interviewing, so I'd say over the last 14 years, I've pretty much interviewed, apart from a few people that have been there before me, interviewed and I hired everybody that's working there. I hire for attitude, not for skill. It's a lot easier to teach skills than it is to teach attitude. It's quite simple, it really is. And if people aren't smiling or friendly to interview, they're not going to be smiling or friendly to your customers. You can get a great sense of even before taking interviews. So sometimes, you know, I'm going to give all my secrets away to the people of Greystones with kids and nephews and grandchildren. But like when I've been on a checkout around the shop floor, and you know, somebody come along and said, can I give you this CV? Like, you know, to be so, to be beaming a smile, so friendly, so genuine. And I write a date on the CV and a big smile. And like I said, yeah, they're definitely worth an interview compared to the person that maybe wouldn't have that big smile or that kind of, of course, people can be nervous, and I have had people, and I've pride myself on maybe seeing through this year where people might have been a bit nervous, but you can actually see that they're a genuine good person. So you don't need to be the extrovert. You don't need to be shouting down the aisle saying hello to the customer. You know what I mean? You can be a genuine person, and that can shine through. And the interview that maybe you're looking at would clarify that for me, whether they are or not. But in a general sense, like, you know, I only hire nice people, and they we've got a great team, super value. You know, I mean, the guys, most themselves, they organise days out, but they go go karts, of course, pre-COVID. You know, go karting, you know, nights out, you know, whether the drinks and different social events, and they all get on. They all get on pretty well. I have been known to approach people as well to see if they wanted to work in super value, even if kind of maybe one of the local establishments where a few years ago I was had a tough day at the office, and my mind was elsewhere. But I went to the queue to get service, went to a petrol station, and I spent my petrol. And but this girl was here. She was so nice and big, happy, smiling face, and she bowled me over just from a customer experience point of view. And so I went down to the door, and there was a lot of slip there, and I was just taught for a minute, and I went back up. So I wrote my name, my phone number, and I waited back in the queue, and I was very quick to tell her just as I passed her my name and phone number, by the way, I'm not trying to chat you up, happily married man with a couple of kids, but I said, I'd say you're very happy here, but if there's ever any case where you're looking for another job or something, I'm the manager of super value, I'd love to have, you're exactly the kind of person I'd love to have working with us. So yeah, 3 weeks later, she was working for me, and she's been there a few years. And Feng has come back to China now some years ago, but some people who are around Greystones for a while would remember Feng and her big beaming smile. So, like, you know, yeah, hire nice people.
That's a great, it's a great lesson in management. I must admit, it's fabulous to hear. And it's important for us as consumers going in and feel that we're treated well, you know, and they were treated well, and it's great, fantastic, well done. So tell me about the second song then, please, buddy.
Okay, second song is Bright Blue Rose. It's written by Jimmy McCarthy. He's a great singer-songwriter. He's written, a lot of people might know of Jimmy and songs he's, but like some of the songs he's written is Bright Blue Rose, No Frontiers, The Contender, Right On. Everybody knows these songs. Maybe they attribute them to Christy Moore and Mary Black, a lot of people who maybe recorded them, a lot of the Virginia songs. So the great song, but Bright Blue Rose has been recorded by Mary Black and Christy Moore. Myself and my wife are a big fan of both, but my wife particularly is a massive Christy Moore fan, as am I, but she is massive. She has gone to, I'd say, in the order of maybe 30 to 40 concerts of Christy Moore, whereas I maybe trailing behind me maybe about 15 or 16 since I've met her. But Bright Blue Rose is a song that generally be played maybe after, at the end of a wedding or after a few drinks, or maybe the guitar came out, I would be known to rendition a bit of Bright Blue Rose some part of the night, or asked to sing it. And in fact, we had it at the church at our wedding. It was a fine song, Bright Blue Rose, and anybody who knew or knows myself and Breen on, they could no, yeah, that's one of their songs. So yeah, Bright Blue Rose, written by Jimmy McCarthy and sang by Christy Moore or Mary Black.
I skimmed across black water without once submerging onto the banks of an urban morning that hungers the first light much, much more than the mountains ever do. And she likes.
I'm not sure if you're aware, but you're affectionately known to us as Super Paddy. And I think it was Rossing it gave you the nickname, and it started off because, you know, Paddy, you know, Paddy Super Paddy, before we got to know you. Oh yeah, the Super Paddy guy, and then you became Super Paddy because of your running and your exercising, that you it's become part of who you are. Like, you tell me a bit about that, because now you're doing all sorts of things. You do the King of Greystones, you do the marathons and et cetera, et cetera. You're swimming. miles.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't happen overnight. There was a bit of a transition from paddy to super paddy, and I mean that in the most affectionate
way. Sure,
yeah,
yeah, no, absolutely. Look, I suppose like as people in their 20s and 30s, I was following life for a while, just like life is just happening to you, and you just go along, get caught up in the river of life, and just keep going with whatever direction it takes you in. I guess over the years, because I would have been sporty when I was a teenager, like I said earlier, I would have played hurling and I would have tried maybe a little bit of running when I was a teenager. But during my 20s and 30s, I suppose I stopped hurling and stopped doing any kind of sport. Like watching sport, but not playing it. I became maybe just a little bit overweight. And over the years, but the waist, the 32-inch waist and trousers, goes to 34, and goes to 36, then it goes to 38. And I'm just shy of 5'6". I'm not the tallest man in the world. So when you get to a size 38 waist and the button pops in your 38 waist, you're going to be looking at a 40. It's time to do something about it. And particularly if you're in shirts, depending on wearing a 17.5 or 18-inch neck shirt. I reckon anybody with a neck that size must be a big, colossal man. You're as tall as yourself, Andrea, maybe a few stone heavier. So I'd have to buy short sleeve shirts that would be, with short sleeve shirts and a shirt that size come down to my wrist, and it'd be tipped up, and it'd be tucked with trousers coming down to the knees. So, everybody maybe has, maybe everybody does, but I certainly had a moment, and it all came within that space, and it was 2013. I remember because within the 1 week the button popped in my 38th waist. I was in the obese category, I would say. I was in the obese category. You got photographs of the super value that was done by a professional photographer, and they were put on super value. And there was a photograph saying, "My name is Paddy, anything I can do to help, please ask." And the first day I walked in, and this was blown up on the wall as I come in the door, and it was disgusted, to be honest, to see what I saw, what other people were obviously seeing. It was a bit of a quadruple chain, and I still have it in my phone as a reminder of where I was, so I don't go back there again. But I was overweight, smoking 20 cigarettes a day, was quite unhealthy. I climbed the stairs to work, I was breathless. So 2013, and I just have to come back from Mallorca. I saw another photograph of me lying on the beach with, I would say, someone lying beside me, and it wasn't, I said, I don't need to be seeing that, nobody needs to be seeing that, and it was really the kick up the arse that I needed to get to turn a corner. So I went home that evening and I told my wife, "That's it, I said, I'm getting healthy, I'm going to start doing a bit of running." And she said, yeah, I've heard this before. So I might have been saying the last 10 years, I will do something, but no, it started me on a journey where I start just running around the block a couple of times. This was, I was living in Lucan at the time, and I remember 11 o'clock at night with a hoodie up, and so none of my neighbours would recognise me while I was running around, waddling around the place. And I'm going to strive to get to 5K, and I remember getting about 3K. In and sitting up in the wall and taking a box of fags and smoking a cigarette. But there's every runners having a cigarette saying, 5K, it's never going to happen. That was 2013. 3 years later, I now do Ironman Frankfurt. In those 3 years, there's a lot of things happened. I believe just starting, anybody asks me for advice, you're an Ironman, or you do marathons every year, and you give me some advice. I said, just start, just get a pair of runners, put them on, run around the block. What I did was, I did a 10K. I pretty much did Couch to Marathon in 2013, which is not necessarily saying everybody has to do that, but it for me, I started the year, I was getting up to maybe 4 or 5K. Friend of mine was saying in May that there was a 10K in Drogheda, the buying 10K. We entered that, and when I say I ran that, ran and walked. It was pretty slow. We got around the course. That evening, somebody mentioned the Rock and Roll Half Marathon in Dublin. So again, kind of clicked onto that. So the most I ran before the 10K, I would have 6K, and so I had to do 10K in the day. The most I ran before the half marathon, the 1st of August, was 16K, but I said I'd do 21K in the day. And that evening, I looked and saw the Dublin Marathon was 10 weeks away, and I clicked on that. So every time I scared, it'd be Jesus out of myself. clicked on the link, entered it, and you know, just trust the process and just get a training plan. First time I found a training plan was probably between the half marathon, the marathon, where I felt that I had to follow a program. So,
but that's phenomenal, and it's brilliant to hear. And so that's your mind works that way, as in you need a program, you need to challenge yourself. We're not all the same. Not all of us can do that. But tell me about that. Like you just told me about from 32 to 38 waist.
Yeah.
And tell me when you were doing all of this over that 2013. What was it like when you were going from 38 back down to
where? Cost me a fortune in clothes, Andrea. Cost me an absolute fortune. And I think it's still a Tommy Hilfiger suit at home, like that's 38 waist, and cost me that much money. I didn't want to throw it out or give it to the charity shops. But yeah, I'm saying this to Paul down the road, that did very well out of me and my suits and all my other pieces of clothing. But yeah, during that time, so I started off, it was losing weight. That was my only goal, I guess, at the time. But what I found was, so 2013, I did the marathon. In 2014, I couldn't swim pretty much 10 yards of a breaststroke. So I was speaking to a friend, they said, oh, you have a bike. The program I was following, the marketing program, Pat Higgins, a cross trainer, so it was a bike on the day off. And he said, yeah, but bike, you know, you should join a triathlon club. I said, one problem there is that I can't swim. And he says, well, that's why you should join a triathlon club, not why you shouldn't. So that kind of changed things. Joined Pulse Triathlon Club in West Dublin, and found a group of friends, and that I'm really close to this day. What I find is when I was training, you feel better, you know, you feel better in yourself. So, but I hadn't realized, and looking back now, it was only the realization how, you know, just kind of caught up in life, you know, kind of having to go to work, having to go home, having to do this. This was kind of the mindset of just following along. Like, you know, I know people talk about, you know, depression or anxiety, and I mean, but there's not black or white. Like everybody knows, there's a little bit of black, a little bit of white, and a whole lot of grey in between. So where I was, in that grayness, I don't know, but I do know when I started moving the body, training, you know, meeting new friends, going out on these runs with friends, and you know, triathlon, getting into triathlons, and again doing the same thing, clicking on different triathlons. And going with friends, that I felt a whole lot better in myself. In my head, talk about meditation. I wouldn't be a great person. I've tried lots of meditating. What I find works for me is going for a run or getting down into the sea for a swim. And I suppose taking ownership of your life. So what I found is in conjunction with the 3 years from 2013-2016 is going from my Facebook post at the time was from Batman to Iron Man, 3 years in the making. But like people were like, oh, wow, people who knew me from the superbiking, like, no, what's happened to you? But I said that the biggest change was from the neck up. And I don't mean the width of my head. I mean, like, it was in the brain. I'd really get so much more confidence in yourself, confident in your abilities. Yeah, your mindset changes that. You know, you take words out like, I'll try, I'm going to try this, or I'm going to try that, like, or someday I'm going to lose weight, as in to say, I will do this, or I will do that. And, you know, whether you think you can or you can't, you're right, you know. So if you find yourself saying, ah, like, you know, I'd like to do that, but I don't think I really could, you really won't. And the opposite is also true. You know, if you know that you will, you will.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I'm going to ask you a couple of things more about the running, but tell me about your third and last song, please.
So my third and last song is Society by Eddie Vedder. I've always been a big fan of Pearl Jam back over the years. But look at Eddie Vedder, and I watched a movie there again quite recently. It was Into the Wild. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great movie. And Eddie, the lead singer of Pearl Jam, he's an amazing voice. Amazing voice. The song Society, if you've seen the movie, and if you haven't seen the movie, I recommend anybody who to look at the movie. It's about society's trappings, and like in society, it controls our lives, making everybody wanting more than what they need. And it's the first few lyrics of the song is, it's a mystery to me. We have agreed to which we have agreed. You think you have to want more than you need. Until you have it all, you won't be free. And I think that's amazing, you know, and really epitomizes of really kind of how I feel at the moment. I mean, you always have. I've never been a materialistic person, but at the moment, and it's easy, maybe in a place like Greystones, where there's an amazing community of people. And there's so much going on, whether it's with the sea swimming or running or whatever it might be. But, you know, you really, expensive cars don't do it for me. You know, just like nice house. Sure, it's nice to have some of these things. But like, you know, kind of good friends, good people around you, good family. That's really what matters. So Society by Eddie Vedder.
It's a mystery to me. We have agreed with which we have agreed. And you think you have to want more than you need. Until you have it all, you won't be free.
Society. It leads perfectly into the question I was going to ask you about the running, because, you know, I met you a few times, you and your mates, me and my mates, were running similar trails, but there's a nice cohort of all, you know, a few of you that are, you know, whenever I look at photographs, you know, the same few heads pop out, which is great to see. So you've now got to a level of running and exercise or whatever you want to call it, that it's there all the time. You do, now that's what you do. You know, you've done the 3 years, 2013 to 2016 for a reason, and now it's kind of, you're topping it up all the time here. So what is that do to you now? What is that running to you? And on the question of community, you're absolutely right, we have a great community, but I'm a great believer that you have to work to have the community, you have to have the community, you have to be part of the community to make sure the community is right. So tell me about the running now, and what does it do for you now, and what it means, and the community as a whole? What do you do to the community? How do you participate as a community? What do you put into it?
Yeah, in the running as a whole, for me, running really is my therapy. You know, on a Friday evening, Friday can be quite a hectic day, a super value. So it's a habit. I have my running gear with me, and I go over the cliff walk, over towards Bray, maybe over to Promenade, and come back over, and there'll be lots of things maybe happening at work, and during the day the brain will be processing them, and some things could be fairly big in the brain, and you have to sort this or sort that. But once, you know, I find you run over to the Promenade or up to, depending on the time you have, up to the top and back down, by the time you come back in towards Greystone, some of these consider issues or problems are small things, and often on time, without giving them too much thought, the answer just comes to you, or you really see them for what they are, which it's not a big thing. I would have done a lot of solo running maybe myself over a few years, because when you're training for whether it be Ironman or something like that, some of the training can be kind of lonely, because you're training for yourself, your own heart rate, etc. So I would have maybe listened to a lot of podcasts and things. I suppose that's where I found your podcast, Andrea, the Social Fabric podcast, and you know, you hear some terrific stories on that, and you've had some amazing guests over the years, I'm not going to maybe pick out one or two because things are evolving, just like they all bring to an individual things. But when I'm at the moment, I find myself running with a group of lads, and I suppose like, it would be polite maybe to go sticking the earphones in, so I don't get quite listen to as many podcasts as I used to. But like I say, you need to be very selective with who you surround yourself with in your four or five, as you know, Andre, you've four or five good buddies, and I know them all, they're all great guys. You know, your own mindset depends on the mindset of those people around you. Mm-hmm. So I have some good friends, and we've got a WhatsApp group, and we meet on Thursday evenings at the Grove Bar, and we either run Glen of Downs or Altadora or whatever it may be, and Sunday mornings, etc. And you always meet other people out running, like yourselves. And the running community itself is almost a community itself. With people who are really into fitness, you all kind of get to know each other. You run similar trails, etc. But getting out there with friends, running, moving your body. People say, once I'm motivated, I'm going to go for a run. You don't just get motivated to go for a run. You move your body, and that brings its own motivation. And you can't wait for motivation to come to you. You'll never regret going out for that run, that cycle, that swim, and just great camaraderie, great slagging,
yeah.
A proper Irish slagging. You know what I mean? They kind of have good friends, and they abuse them from a height, and they abuse you, and you laugh it off. It's good.
Absolutely, it's fantastic. But do you ever get asked the question when you get back home after a 4-hour run, to what do you guys talk about?
I think Breenan would be afraid to ask that question. Breenan has been on her own fitness journey over years, and we both ran the Longford Marathon together in 2018, side by side. But she knows a lot of guys I'm friendly with, and she's a good time for them all. So I think maybe her asking that question, if we talk over 4 hours tonight, this question maybe just need the answer. Yeah, no, we talk about everything and anything and everything in between.
Yeah, no, the reason I say that was we just talked about something the other day on a long run, and I was talking to Sylvie, my wife, and she said, "So what do you guys talk about when you're running?" It was like quite a serious story, and it was important. It was important to talk about it. And I found, as you say, when you're out there, especially for the long runs, things come out, things come out. And it's really, I don't need to know what you're talking about, but I think the importance is there, that motivation you're talking about. Three of you might be super motivated, and the fourth guy might be lagging. And that comes along, you bring him along.
Absolutely, I find maybe four or five goes out running together, and there's a bit of slagging, a bit of messing. But I find maybe sometimes you go over to two or three lads, and a more serious topic might come up, or something maybe that's happening in your life, and somebody might mention it, and somebody might say, they know something about that, and sometimes conversations can turn a little bit maybe somber sometimes, and you're kind of it is therapy, you could pay a fortune and getting the same therapy as well. But it's not that anybody necessarily have the answers for it, but even just maybe talking through things that just getting off your chest or just saying how you feel, absolutely, just have an ear for somebody to listen to that, it's great, and so I highly recommend it together.
Yeah, and I think it's great for us men, and I know some of the guys who are running with, I don't know them that well, but I know what they do for a living, which is interesting, because it's interesting to from other people to hear that, we're all the same. We're all different jobs, and sometimes you have a high pressure job. Sometimes you're whatever the industry you're in. But if you put yourself in the right situation with the right mindset, then that freedom or that vulnerability to express yourself, whatever is important in that moment, is fantastic. It's a fantastic thing to have. It's quite priceless. Really, it's priceless.
Absolutely, and it's the supports are there. We're both married men. You have your wife, your spouse, that you can talk to, confide things in. But sometimes you need, a friend or a mate just for that other conversation, and somebody just to maybe to nod and say, I understand, I get it. So lucky to have that. I think I have that And I know you have it. If any of your group is good, because you know, men are notorious. Men don't maybe talk or share like women do. And so it, you know, if you have a couple of good friends that you can actually have a chat with and talk about things, maybe when things aren't as good, as sometimes they are, it's very important to have that in your life.
Yeah, and as I keep saying, look, it's important. It's easy to do. Start as not like what you just said about running the marathon. Start with buying your shoes. Start with find the right couple of friends. Go for a walk. Go sit down on the bench. Do whatever.
Absolutely.
You know, it doesn't have to be a run. Doesn't have to be, but just
no, go
find
for
it and
go for a walk. Go
and
for
and you know, offer your story. Start with that and see what happens. You know, don't be asking questions straight away. Just offer your story and see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's brilliant. So tell me about the book. Have you any book recommendation for us?
Book recommendation. Yeah, like I'm an avid reader. I love books. I read all sorts of books, biographies, fiction. I sometimes have two or three books on the go, and so I'm just thinking, God, book recommendations. Just so many come to mind, but again, I suppose keeping with from what I was alluded to earlier, Jerry Duffy, TikTok 10.
Very good.
It's a great book. It's about, like, I mean, Jerry, I suppose, there'll be similarities between myself and Jerry. Now, when I say similarities, I don't mean, Jerry's done 10 Ironman triathlons in 10 consecutive days. He's like, you know, a 2 hour, whatever, American runner and all that. So I'm certainly not up there with Jerry, but the journey that Jerry was on, like, when he was reading the book, he was fairly overweight, and he found the fitness journey and how it helped him and how it helped his mindset, and I definitely that's where the similarities lay, and reading that, it really gave me motivation. So Jerry's TikTok 10 came out 2013, I probably read it in 2014, and there is, I remember reading it while I was doing in 2015, there's a 70.3 triathlon in Mallorca. And so my swimming would have been my Achilles heel. I wouldn't have been a great swimmer. Like, as I said, I was 10 yard breaststroker at the start of 2014. So here I found myself having to do my 1.9 kilometer swim, which ends up being over 2 kilometers, but you never swim straight in a straight line. But I do remember going over there, and I remember being so nervous. My stomach was doing somersaults the night before the triathlon. So here we are in Mallorca. We're staying in a hotel, and we were there by the poolside. Some of the lads had done the triathlons before, and they hadn't got those nerves, and they were having a laugh and a joke. And I found myself, I had to take myself away to the other side of the swimming pool and sit there by myself reading, because I couldn't join in on the crack. I was just too nervous. And just when I was reading the book, near the end of the book, there's a chapter, Why? And I couldn't have read it at a better time, because it was like, saying, you know, why does he do these triathlons and these 10 Ironmans in 10 days? And he says, it's not that, you know, he gets to do them. Like, you know, if you're healthy bodied, and you're healthy bodied, think of all the people in the hospitals around the world, in the country. Like, think of people, you know, that would love to be doing what you're doing. So I read this chapter. I was on with Terry Fox, the Canadian 18-year-old who's running across Canada with a prosthetic leg to raise funds for cancer. And here am I, I'm in Mallorca with friends beside the swimming pool. You know, I could be back at work, going to work the next day. I'm here, you know, getting to do a 70.3 triathlon. How lucky am I? And you know, I got a word of advice. Your friends and family, first and foremost, want you to be safe, number one, and number two, to enjoy yourself. So any pressure you feel is the pressure that you're putting on yourself. Mm-hmm. And said, nobody really cares. I mean, Paddy Hoolan's not going to come first in the triathlon. He's not going to even come 100. He's going to be well down the pack. So, you don't have to do this. You get to do it. And it changed my mindset completely that evening. Well, the following morning, I said, I'm just going to enjoy this. So I had a beautiful swim. Just went out on the bike and had a wonderful bike ride. You know, all my friends said, he was just looking at me and a big smile pacing on my face as I was going around and enjoying the countryside. there was somebody harvesting lemons. I remember getting the smell of lemons and out in the run. I really enjoyed the run. And it was just like, you know, it was one of those days sent from heaven. It was really an amazing day. And it was just like, you know, yeah, going back to that, the book TikTok 10 and of why, you know, I don't have to, I get to do these things. And it brought that with me. And a lot of the time before big races, whether it be an Ironman or a marathon, whatever, I often just reread that chapter. I don't have to do this. I get to do it.
Fantastic. That's amazing, Paddy. Loads of wisdom in there. I'm going to ask you one last question and then I'll let you go. And the question is quite simple. For those customers that walk in, all those people that you meet, you meet a lot of people all the time, not just at work, because that's the way, you know, like your father Dennis, you like to talk to everybody. But for those people that don't know you, they just saw you or see you just as whatever. Paddy the runner, Paddy the super value manager, whatever, all the different labels that people put on us. What would you say about yourself, if you were to introduce yourself to a complete unknown? What would you say? How would you introduce yourself as?
I would say, I'm Paddy. I'm a husband. I'm a father. I work in the supermarket for a living. I enjoy doing some sports, running, triathlon, keeping active, and you know, that is me. From, you know, we are so much more than what we do as a job, than you know, even speaking to somebody down the road, you know, you get a snapshot of them, but we are so much more. And I mean, that's some people see, and some people will see different parts of us than what other people see. So, you know, you just, what I've learned over the last few years, you know, you have to give yourself a break. You know, you can't pigeonhole yourself. You can't, you know, anybody's opinion of you is their opinion. You know, you can't let it, you know, you can think about it for a moment, but like, you know, kind of, if they have baggage and that's their baggage, you know, don't let it impact on you. And say, yeah, you know, if anybody ever comes in super value and they're seeing your journey and say, you know, give me some advice, what to do, what should I do, drink more water, and take the first step. You don't have to see the whole staircase, just take that first step. And whether you think you can or you can't, you're right.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, Paddy Hulan, that's been absolutely amazing to have you on. I've been thinking about it for a number of years that I was going to have you, and now the time was right to talk to you, and absolutely a pleasure to, and thanks a million for sharing your story.
Privilege, Andrea. Thank you very much.
But if I meet you somewhere far down the line, the sun still shines in your hair. I kiss you once, then I'll say goodbye. Yeah, if I meet you someplace far down the line, the sun still shines in your face. I kiss you once, then I'll say goodbye.